Hi everyone, welcome to STEPS audio channel. We are very excited to share our content from STEPS events to learn all about the latest trends in startups, digital media, fintech, future tech, and wellness in emerging markets. You can find us on Anagami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to your favorite channel, and we hope you enjoy the content.
I do realize that my hair color is a bit different than the big screen, but let's ignore that and kick off our very first question with Dina. So, as we all know, financial literacy has been growing more and more over the years, with fintech coming into the picture and more people becoming interested in that field specifically. Which leads me to my first question. How do you define financial literacy in the context of fintech and wealth management today?
Yeah, thank you. Well, financial literacy is pretty much the same in both. But we need to think about what's the purpose of financial literacy. It's to learn how to manage our money so that we can have more choices to live the life we want to live. And that's basically about building your wealth. So we learn how to earn, save, and invest part of what we save to build our wealth. When it comes to fintech, though, I think it's becoming more and more important to focus on financial literacy because it enables people to do transactions faster. It also gives them different tools that they're not used to. So starting the process as early as possible, and ideally with kids, is actually what you want to do, to teach them the basics so that when they are exposed and have access to these financial tools, they make better financial decisions for themselves to grow their wealth over time.
Bilal, do you have anything to say about that?
Honestly, no. Spot on. Is this working? Yeah. So spot on what you said. Financial literacy is all about, we work very hard to make money and create wealth. But then once we have it, financial literacy is how to manage it, how to manage your savings, how to invest, how to reach your financial objectives. So it's really, what's the point of money if we don't think of the world from a perspective of objectives? And do we have enough knowledge, experience, or expertise to meet those objectives in the best way?
Moving on to the second question. What are some emerging trends in fintech that are revolutionizing wealth management practices? Amelia and Ashim, I'm counting on you for that.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much for that. So I think first off, we have to look at what do we look at when we say financial literacy or wealth management. And I think that largely depends on what demographic we define. So if we look at some stats, for instance, a third of the world is being seen as financial literate. A third. So if we say that two-thirds of the world are financially illiterate, that is a huge number. Now, looking at those financially illiterate people, we have to look at, well, where do they stay? Where do they sit? Where do they live in the world? So if we look at emerging markets versus more developed markets, there is a huge disparity between financial literacy. So in emerging markets, the trends that we certainly see are really more about fintech apps having embedded financial literacy solutions. So where you say that, okay, I have a savings app, I have an investing app, or you know anything that sort of helps you even have access to financial tools and products. So now I'm also teaching you, though, what is interest. So if you're taking a loan, what does that mean? I'm not just allowing you to take the loan and get yourself into some terrible debt, but I'm ensuring that you're now, through my app, gaining this embedded education so that you can increase your financial literacy. As you increase your financial literacy, wealth management now becomes accessible. Before then, you're not thinking about wealth management. You're thinking about paying bills, growing your business, doing those things. But now you can start thinking about, okay, now I know how to do these things. This app is teaching me how to do more. I think in more developed markets, fintech apps can certainly help us do a lot more, being much more efficient, smarter, and more effective with our sort of financial decision making. So if we talk about robo-advisory and investing, for instance, or AI-driven sort of, you know, trading bots and all of that, you know, but you have to have a general level of financial literacy to then be able to start, you know, interacting with those tools.
And so totally get like what you pointed out with now the democratization of new access to other investments. So it's not anymore about just banking with your bank. Fintechs has now suddenly added right, you can buy and sell shares, you can buy and sell crypto. There is a whole new level of education that needs to be done. And depending on the market, so what we see in the UK, for example, there were a general dissatisfaction with the banks. The fintechs have been able to capture the market extremely quickly, especially the younger generation. In the UAE here, we see that actually the traditional financial system has got one of like the highest level of trust in the world. And the fintech are coming, and they are in order for them to not only like thrive but capture the market, they have got to gain the trust. And the only way for them to gain the trust is to do a ton of education. So financial literacy comes also from the need from fintech to make sure that they gain the trust of like the customers. But however, I think so. I come from like a crypto background, and we see in the UAE a huge opportunity for the banks who have got this huge amount of trust to stop. I wouldn't say stop people from like going to fintech, because like it's not. I don't want to say like it's a war, but definitely the banks, the traditional banks here, have got a huge opportunity to continue the education, to help customers to be more financially literate and be the trusted partner for them to be then like dabbling into investment, into different, including crypto.
When we say financial literacy, it's a very broad term, I would say. It's very vast, it's very vague. What would you say are the basics? Let's say I'm someone who's not really like familiar with finance, whether it's fintech, traditional finance, or more. Where should I start from? And at what age, specifically? What would you encourage?
You can actually start from as young as 3 or 4 years old. You can teach kids that age very basic skills. And of course, as they grow, there's more skills that you can teach them. Now, the basics of financial literacy, I know it sounds like a scary term. It's a big world that encompasses many things, including fintech, entrepreneurship, insurance, Bitcoin, and so on, right? Cryptocurrency, investing. But the basics are really about how do I manage my money the best way based on my life goals? What do I want to achieve in my life? What kind of lifestyle do I want to build for myself? And going through the very, very basics of, all right, so now I want to manage my money. First, I need to earn money. What are the sources of income? Not just from a typical job that's, you know, having a salary. What are other ways that I can earn income? With kids, we talk about like, you know, doing small projects and doing chores at home and getting paid for them and so on. And they can start learning that they can earn income in different ways. Then you go into, all right, I'm earning this income. How do I manage my spending the best way possible to be able to save? Because also saving is another basic goal. Right? So how can I track my spending? Do I have the tools to do that? Do I have things like a banking app, a prepaid card, and things where I see where my money is going? And then also putting money aside for savings. And why do we also encourage savings? It's not just to save. I mean, many people have the goal of like, it's important to save, put money aside. That's all great. But the bigger goal these days, because just saving alone is not going to grow your wealth. The bigger goal is to have savings for emergencies and, of course, to buy the things that you want to, but also to put part of it to invest, to keep building that wealth. And that's a very important lesson to teach kids from the very early on. So to start, I think the core of it is really budgeting. If I wanted to coin it in one topic, it's really budgeting and everything that entails based on what you want. What are your goals? Because your goal is not going to be the same as my goal or someone else's in this room, based on what I want to achieve and working backwards and then figuring out how do I manage my budget in that way.
I would add one thing to that, which is financial literacy. You know, the world of finance is huge, whether it's payments, whether it's taking lending, but it's also, should I buy a property versus should I rent a property? Should I take a mortgage? If I am investing, you know, learning more about investing could be extremely challenging. What should I be investing in? And then each asset class, I have to understand more and more about it. And I think where fintech has done exceptionally well is traditionally you had one large organization that used to do everything. And now you have specialist firms in each one of these verticals. And therefore, it's more on demand. So if I need to make a decision about property investing, I would go one place. But then if I want to teach my kids about saving, I would go a different place. So the what's great about fintech is been able to break down these very large organizations to specialist firms that do things in a very efficient way, in a very credible way.
And just to add, I think, is that we also need to look at financial literacy as one, but then also the confidence around financial literacy. So, I mean, there's various research and studies out there that indicate that, for instance, women actually feel financially much less confident than their male counterparts. And this is really when they were asking questions about, you know, what is this instrument? What is this? You know, do you understand what an, you know, what debt is? And they just indicated much more often, I don't know, right? So it's not only about, are you financially literate? Do you understand what this term is? Do you understand how, you know, debt works? Do you understand what an asset is? Do you understand how to save money or invest? But also, how confident do you feel doing it, right? So I may have had some financial literacy education. Maybe I learned some in school or from my parents, but I may not feel confident in then actually executing upon these this knowledge that I have or feel like I don't have. So it's really important that we then also say, well, how do we increase financial confidence or financial literacy confidence so that people actually say, okay, well, now I actually feel enabled or emboldened to be able to make these decisions. And I think this is where a lot of these fintech apps are really coming in handy, because they're almost like a coach or like a handheld guide that can actually take you through step by steps. I mean, we've seen this in some other tools as well, whether this is investing through a syndicate, because now my confidence level is a little bit higher. So instead of writing a ticket for myself, I'm joining in a network or a syndicate of angel investors, and I'm now investing together with them. Or this is to say, I have now gone for, you know, a fixed income product through my bank or through, you know, a fintech app out there, because I don't necessarily need to, you know, analyze the products, understand, model, but I can have somebody else do that, that gives me that confidence. So really important that, you know, we also look at, well, you know, how do we increase the confidence level of, you know, the sort of demographics that we're targeting out there, in order for them to be able to interact with the tools that we want them to, in order to ensure that they increase their savings. And I think, Dina, to your point, you know, start them young. You know, if you've got kids, it's great to start them young already, help them understand. They have great questions, by the way, right? Oftentimes, they can lead these educational sessions just by you allowing them to ask questions around, you know, oh, well, how does a business work, right? What is profit? You know, if you talk about a margin, what is that? So, you know, it really does help. And then you can actually take that into other things as well.
One point I would like to focus on about something you said, that theory is very different than the real life application of things, which like challenges can stem from that point. How can individuals overcome these challenges in today's digital age, because we have like a lot of new projects coming out every day and it can be like overwhelming sometimes. So how can people overcome that, and like when it comes to managing their finances, wealth management, and so on and so forth?
I think there's a part of fintech that's made that challenging, or the digital age that's made that challenging, which is, it's like going to a restaurant where you have too many menu items. And when you have too many menu items, you don't have the confidence in what you're choosing because there's so much optionality. And when it comes to learning, there's so many people on social that have opinions or educating. And sometimes are they doing the right type of education? So when it comes to confidence, the problem in the digital world as well is the fact that there's a lot of opinions. And I think back to the trend, one of the trends that's coming now is, I think that's one of the benefits of generative AI, is generative AI as a sometimes a sounding board, as you know, we talk about GPT-4 as an example. It knows the CFA, it knows a lot, and it could be used as a sounding board sometimes to just make sure that we're making the right decisions. And I think that's a trend that we should see more and more of, in terms of how do we, as an industry, but how do individuals make the right choices when they're faced with so much different optionality.
To add to that, I would just say, like, also before we reach the point today as adults, and how do we do that today, is to start early with kids, right? And not just in an educational point of view. The best way for kids to learn is through experiential learning, which is exactly doing. So actually giving them their own money to manage, to make mistakes in a safe environment where you as a parent, you're guiding them and correcting them, but giving them advice and telling them no, you know, showing them if you had decided to do this instead of that, then you could have saved and bought so on and so forth, and them learning from their mistakes. And I think by doing that today, hopefully it will also teach kids and build their confidence from a very early on years in their life, so that when they do grow up, they have at least confidence in these basics, right? The saving, the spending, those decision making. And hopefully with time, and hopefully it will come soon, as well as other things, including investing, because you can also help your kids invest. You can invest on behalf of your kids. You can show them what to do, and they can choose the stocks or whatever kind of instruments, and they can learn through that by seeing their actual money, what's happening to it as well.
But sometimes the problem is the parents.
I mean, but the best part is actually a lot of the parents learn through their kids.
For sure.
So it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, no doubt. But I think I agree. I have kids myself, and giving them financial literacy at a young age makes a lot of sense because it's how the world works. But when we do market studies and we see financial literacy on adults that have money, you will see if you compare, let's say, an adult who's a high net worth individual to a very professional investor, you will see a very large gap in terms of how they invest. And sometimes the best education is the one that the parent gives the kids. So educating, you know, how do we go about educating as well the parents to make sure that they're making right financial decisions to trickle that down to the children as well. But agreed, if we educate the children well, down the line, we have a much better financial system and an allocation of capital.
But I think, I'm so sorry, Anthony. I think to add to that is that, you know, there are incredible apps out there that really allow you to do both, where, you know, I mean, an example is Revolut, okay, a company that probably everybody knows. And this is a digital app, really, right? And they have kids' accounts, right? And kids can have debit cards. And so you can actually, and they can have an app on their own iPad or phone or whatever they have, because these are digital natives now, this generation of children. They are digitally savvy, but interestingly enough, studies actually indicate that the younger generations actually are less financially literate than older generations. So if you look at the percentages, baby boomers apparently were or are actually much more financially literate than the Gen Z generation now, even though they're digitally more native. So we've got to look at how do we marry these two together. So for instance, take a Revolut, right? If you've got an account and if you have kids, get them an account under it, right? Get them a card that, by the way, you can monitor. You get all the, you know, alerts and everything. But they can have the app on their phone. They understand, okay, my pocket money, if they get any, goes in here. When my auntie gives me money, it goes in there. And when I spend it, by the way, I can see how it's going down. I can understand why it's going down. What did I spend it on? And it really does enable them actually move their money in a, you know, better way, because they, you know, they're not traditional like maybe some of us, you know, in the older generation. Cash is just not something that is still very normal to them, because they see us using our phones to pay, using our smartwatches to pay, you know, using plastic, right, cards to pay. So cash is not something that is tangible when it comes to financial literacy for this generation. So we do need to enable them and ensure that we actually give them these tools very early on, so that they can understand that this digital nativeness that I inherently have actually is hand in hand now with financial literacy.
And that's, it's so interesting you say about like the cash, because you can count. You've got 100, let's say like 100 dirham in your pocket here. You would go, you would spend it, you would see your parents spending. You see the 100 with a phone, with a card, with your watch. You don't see that. You don't see the other hand, like how much there is, how much there is left. And it is a bit, but to go back on to one of the topics that I found quite interesting is culture. Because money, talking about money, oops, there you go. talking about money is something that in certain culture is taboo. you don't talk about money. You don't talk about money at home. You don't talk about how much you earn. Never. You don't talk about how much you spend. Never. So in culture where money is not something that is discussed, I mean, I go back to the role of banks being a trusted advisor, where you will have to go to your bank to manage your money at some point. Well, the banks can actually very influence in this culture. Well, if this is not something that's going to be learned at home, then let's do some initiative where we incentivize this education to be provided at school so that the kids can little by little change their behavior if the behavior at home is not the best.
But sometimes there's perverse incentives, right? And we talk about perverse incentives. Sometimes the bank doesn't have an incentive necessarily to educate. And then it's, you know, how do we make sure that when we're getting advice from players, that that advice is in my best interest and not their best interest? And I think also educating the general public, adults and children, in terms of when you're getting advice, what's in it for the other side? And what's that quality of the advice really matters, because then they get influenced, and sometimes they're influenced incorrectly. And I think culture plays a big role. I grew up in Lebanon. In Lebanon, I don't think there's been any effective transfer of wealth. So definitely agree.
So like now that we've almost covered everything, one question: what are the long-term societal benefits of like financial literacy, wealth management? Everything we've talked about is great, but like when it comes to actually applying it in the real-life world, how can it like lead our generation and our society forward?
I mean, you have more financially savvy people who make better decisions in their lives, hopefully not get into debt and financial trouble overall, and therefore being able to build their wealth over time, to live the life that they want, and also to give back. I mean, when someone's doing well and they're wealthy, it gives back to society, gives back to the economy as well at the same time. So having more happy, stable, financially aware, confident society is something that's very, very positive for any society. But I just want to add also before I go on the importance, because we were talking about the advice and you're talking about the kids, having most kids actually want to learn from their parents, and research has shown that. So regardless if you have them, it's amazing if it's in school, but it's really important, and it's our responsibility. I know we like to say like fintechs, banks, schools should be teaching us all these skills, but it's really important to us as individuals, as parents, to be the ones who teach them these basics at least, and to educate ourselves to teach them even more advanced skills and so on. So I just had to add that because it's really important to recognize that kids want to learn from their parents. If they had a choice, they don't want to talk to anyone else, they don't want to talk about friends, they want to see this from their parents.
So I'll add something here. Yeah. So the data suggests that financial net wealth in the UAE, so amongst adults, is 85% cash. So if you look at that and you walk around, and I think STEP Conference is a great place to ask that question, because if you look around, you have so much opportunities and you have so much businesses that exist, there are opportunities looking for money. And maybe you would go out in the world and say, there's not a lot of money out there. But if you look at the UAE, there's a lot of cash and there's a lot of money. And what the benefit is for the ecosystem is you have a lot of money looking for a home, and you have a lot of opportunity looking for money, and they're just not being connected at the moment. So if that gets solved, you have a much more vibrant region where opportunities get funded, and the ones that succeed really do change the environment and create that high growth that the GCC and we're looking for right now.
I think Celine, thank you for that question, because I think that's really important. And as an investor, we always look at what's the impact that any of our investments, you know, generates out there. So the, you know, economic, the societal impact is really key here. And I believe that financial literacy especially is actually something that can significantly increase economic improvements across board. So especially in emerging markets, and that's where we, you know, primarily deal business, you can actually see this quite significantly They say that in Africa, for instance, for every one person, they have a network of about 7 to 20 other people that they support. Now imagine a person, man or woman, who is more financially aware, more confident, more savvy, is able to make proper financial decisions. This means that the impact is not only in them and in the products that they are now consuming. If they're taking a loan for their business, for instance, they're able to actually exponentially grow their business. But this also means that there is a ripple effect, you know, dominoes for those 7 to 20 people that they're supporting, whether that means that they can afford better healthcare, it means that they can send their children to school, not just their own, maybe their, you know, nephews and nieces and all of that. Whether it means that they can ensure that they can live in safer, better environments, whether it means that because they've been able to take one loan, understood it from a financial literacy perspective, were able to now pay it back, their credit worthiness has now increased, they can take a bigger loan, continue to grow their business. By the way, now they have another business they've opened, and so on and so forth. So it's really, really key that we actually move financial literacy ahead, that we utilize the products, the solutions that we have out there that we're building or that we're investing in, and actually ensure that we look at, well, what is the impact that we're creating with these? Is there educational resources? Are they opportunistic in nature? And if they are, how do we turn that around potentially to say, well, yes, sure, you've got to, you know, apply interest, for instance, if you're, you know, a loan business, but how do we look at more ethical ways in doing that? How do we look at making sure that there's an education that stands behind it? So, you know, really important, because that impact is incredibly significant and has so many ripple effects.
But how can this impact be measured now that we're almost running out of time? How can this impact be measured, and how long will it take for it, like, to show that people are starting to get into this financial literacy, into wealth management, into wanting to get better, to learn more? How much time do you think you guys, like, will it most probably take? Is it gonna be for my generation or for the generations to come?
I think we need to solve it as soon as possible. I think a good measure is how much cash is in the bank and what is the money. I don't think there's a lot of disagreement in the financial world of what a good asset allocation looks like. There's a few, you know, opinions here and there, but there's general consensus in what asset allocation could and should look like. And the measure should be, what is it currently looking like versus what is somewhat optimal? And I think in time, I think it's our responsibility as, you know, fintech, as an ecosystem, it's our responsibility to speed that time up as much as possible.
I mean, I think... I'm a pragmatist, so while I agree that it would be great to solve this in the shortest, you know, time frame possible, I personally don't think it's in our lifetime. If we look at 3.5 billion people globally that are financially excluded or not literate, that is a really big number to solve. I think it is probably one of the big challenges of our generation. But I don't think that we will solve it within our generation. But we do need to look at, how do we measure it, right? It's exactly like climate change, okay? Another huge challenge of our generation, but we've got to make sure that as we're looking to solve it, we're actually looking at measurable ways in which we do it. So how do we make sure that we're closing that gap? How do we make sure that as we're not just closing the gap, we're actually going into wealth management as well and increasing that? I think there was a study after COVID that actually said that the wealth of the top, say, 1 or 2% globally had exponentially grown, while the wealth, or, you know, sort of the wealth of the poorest, you know, people had actually decimated significantly. So we do need to look at those kind of big effects, the impacts they have, and look at how do we turn that around and how do we invest in those kind of solutions long term.
Anything you guys would like to add before we run out of time? We're less than 1 minute, so... Any closing notes, final notes?
I think it's hard to measure. I think it takes like a big project to do that. And you know, you had like financial literacy surveys and so on that you can do, but it's only a sample, right? So it's looking at that as one way. It's looking at the economy of a country. It's looking at maybe any kind of figures that banks or other wealth management companies are willing to share, which there aren't. So it's difficult to measure. I think maybe, I mean, just off the top of my head, like maybe like the happiness index of a nation. I don't know, honestly. But I think what's important is, regardless of how fast we think it can be solved or not, I think for me, it's always about investing in the kids now, so that hopefully when they are our age and on a stage speaking to people, it's already something that's passed and they're focusing on other issues.
Okay, now that time is unfortunately up. I do hope that you guys enjoyed this session. And if you'd like to connect with any of our speakers, I think they would be available for a quick chat. So once again, thank you guys and have a good rest of the day.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find our content on Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Follow us on social media at Step Conference and let's stay in touch.